The United States and China are today locked in an intense competition in the arena of advanced technology. Both countries aspire to lead the world in such technologies as artificial intelligence, quantum physics, 5G telecommunications, and blockchain, to name just a few. Financial technology, or fintech, which is changing how people relate to banking and investing, is emerging as another area of competition between the two countries. Is China in the midst of what might be called a digital leap forward? And if so, what does this mean for the United States and the world? Is China on the cusp of outcompeting the United States in critical 21st century advanced technology areas? What's happening in fintech and blockchain today? And how will competition in these areas play out in the U.S.-China relationship? My name is David Feierstein, and welcome to the Bush China Foundation podcast. Joining me today to explore these questions is Mr. Winston Ma, a leading expert on the global digital economy. Winston, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, David. Great to join the Bush China Foundation podcast today.
Winston Ma is an investor, attorney, author, and New York University adjunct professor in the global digital economy. Most recently, he was managing director for the China Investment Corporation, or CIC, China's sovereign wealth fund. Prior to CIC, Winston served as the deputy head of equity capital markets at Barclays Capital, as vice president at J.P. Morgan Investment Banking, and a corporate lawyer at Davis Polk & Wardwell LLP. He has authored many books, including most recently, The Hunt for Unicorns, How Sovereign Funds Are Reshaping Investment in the Digital Economy, and The Digital War, How China's Tech Power Shapes the Future of AI, Blockchain, and Cyberspace. Winston, today's highly competitive technological landscape between the United States and China has led to more and more restrictions around technology flows between the two countries. For example, the United States has tightened its foreign investment review process and also its export controls. Meanwhile, Chinese investment into the United States has dropped precipitously, particularly in the technology sector. What impact will these developments have on the two countries' tech sectors and on the relationship between the two countries?
Sure, David. You know, as we can all see, a U.S.-China tech decoupling is real and accelerating. You know, hence the digital economy is in a vital conflict and a crisis. You know, on one hand, tech entrepreneurs are driving the prospect of tech singularity, hyper-connected society, and the internet of everything, right? So if we look at these, right, the keywords are singularity, hyper-connected, and the internet of everything. But on the other hand, you know, the global tech world, and together with at least a part of the whole global economy, is now fractured into, right, and spheres of influence, considering the U.S.-China tech war, plus Europe, Japan, and other regions. So to your question, you know, I think it does have a serious negative impact for tech innovations going forward. If we look into the example of TikTok's situation in the U.S., now the interesting background of this is that there are only two companies in the world that have more than 100 users in both China and in the U.S. You know, the other one is Apple, right? And here, TikTok, you know, with its parent ByteDance, represents another company that has a significant presence in both China and the U.S. markets. You know, as we know, during the Trump administration, there was an executive order whereby TikTok must be sold to U.S. investors. But if we look beyond that transaction, what it means is that the global environment is very difficult for true global tech companies. And going forward, we will see the tech decoupling presents a serious challenge to startup founders seeking innovations for the global markets.
Some really interesting issues to dissect there. But let me ask you this basic question. Some are referring to China's efforts to establish essentially primacy in certain key technology areas as China's, quote, digital leap forward. Can you give us a sense for what China is doing and what it is seeking to achieve in this area And how concerned should the United States be about China's ambitions in the technology area?
You know, essentially, this is about the last decade of China's economic transformation. It first started with the concept of information consumption, started by the new administration in 2013, you know, led by President Xi. And the concept of information consumption was to use information technologies to drive more consumption in China, because China was onto an economic transformation, you know, from the old model of import-export-driven economy into the new model of a consumption and innovation-driven economy. So that was the first phase. And then the second phase was the Digital China Initiative from the China government, you know, which essentially means to drive all industries, especially the traditional industries, to go through a digital transformation, adopting new technologies like AI, big data analytics, to change the traditional industries into more competitive business models going forward. And now the third phase, which is now, right, is what you described, where, you know, China wants to become the leading innovation center for the global digital economy. The most obvious image is the latest five-year plan for 2021 to 2025 that was unveiled in March this year. In this five-year plan, China called for nurturing new digital industries, including AI, big data, blockchain, and cloud computing, and more. So essentially, what China is saying is, during the last decade, China was catching up mobile internet economy and 4G technologies. But in the age of 5G, China wants to start at the same place as the Western technology superpowers, such as the U.S. So U.S. must recognize that China has done several decades of preparation work, and now China is poised to be a trendsetter instead of a trend follower in the new digital economy. And this really relates to the challenge to U.S. supremacy in the tech world. And I think for U.S., that means real competition just starts right now.
Winston, given that you have worked in both Chinese and American contexts, what advantages or disadvantages do you see in the two countries when it comes to the idea of building a truly 21st and 22nd century digital economy? Does either country, by virtue of its system or policy approach, enjoy a particular advantage over the other, or are the two countries at some level of parity when it comes to the technology competition?
I like to think that the U.S. and China are very similar. Last decade, China followed the U.S. innovation, and the advantage of the China model, obviously, is the focus from the government and the corresponding large sum of government funding into research and development. So if you look at the AI area, in 2017, China hosted the historical game between the best human player of the Go chess game and the AI program developed by the DeepMind lab of Google. And of course, you know, the AI algorithm beat the best human player straight 3-0. And that was a wake-up call to China government as well as the internet industries. Now, what happened maybe was a coincidence, but several months after that historical game, China came up with a national AI development plan, calling China to become the leading AI country by 2030. The rationale of the story is lots of countries talk about AI ambition, but China is a rare country that actually put a concrete plan there. Another example is semiconductor. You know, China is still behind in semiconductor chip industries when compared to the U.S. So China has set up a $30 billion government fund specifically for semiconductor industry. It put lots of capital into new semiconductor startups in order to cultivate Chinese semiconductor players in the face of potential U.S. sanctions. So this side, you can see the advantage of China's central government-driven policy. Now, what's interesting is that the U.S. is doing something similar. The U.S. is behind 5G communication technology. There's no national champion for 5G in the U.S. So what we have seen is that the U.S. has put up government funding to promote research and development in 5G area to provide alternative technologies to Huawei 5G equipment. Now, another side of the story is about competition. You know, the U.S. traditionally has the advantage in this aspect because in the U.S. you have a robust private market, and the competition within the private market is a driver for new innovation. Now, China is learning from that lesson as well. As we see last couple of months, China is developing new regulatory framework to limit the power of the largest internet platforms in China, like Alibaba, Tencent, TikTok, so on and so forth. And the goal of that, at least to a large extent, I think, is to promote more innovation in China's internet industries, such that we can still see new generation of new startups to come from that system. So overall, I think, you know, both from the government policy and competition perspectives, the China-US can learn from each other, and they are doing that right now.
I think that's exactly right. And just to amplify a point, Winston, that you just made, I think the United States is increasingly inclined to put some serious federal effort and resources behind our national efforts to get to a better place in the technology competition. And we see that in the form of the Endless Frontier Act and in potential investments, federal investments into the tens of billions of dollars in semiconductor research and manufacturing. And it seems to me that the United States sees merit in China's more state-centric approach and is now adopting some of those approaches itself in ways that frankly are different than what the United States has tended to do historically. But I think your points are very well taken. There's a sense that the United States needs to do some things differently in order to be able to compete with China more effectively. Let me ask you about blockchain, Winston, because I know you've focused a lot on that in your work. Just at a very broad level, can you give us a sense for where the two countries are respectively with blockchain technology, and to what degree blockchain figures into the overall technology competition now between the United States and China?
Yes, you know, actually, this is another example of China's government-oriented promotion of new technologies. In 2019, President Xi made the announcement that blockchain is, quote unquote, a critical information technology. And he called for Chinese tech industries to develop blockchain applications so as to, quote unquote, grasp the opportunities. Now, this represented the first major economy leader to endorse the blockchain technology, which, as we all know, is a widely hyped but not yet fully proven technology. But nevertheless, President Xi's policy calling gave a big boost to China's blockchain industry. And as a result, you know, we are seeing Chinese developers are making big progress in terms of adopting blockchain technologies into real economy applications, such as supply chain financing applications, etc. And also relating to blockchain, regarding the topic of sovereign digital currency based on blockchain technology, China is also more aggressive than the U.S. Since 2019, China has started the research of China's CBDC, you know, central bank digital currency. And since last year, China has started testing the new digital currency in the real world. And by 2021, it has been tested at a large scale in various different business contexts. And we can expect that in a year or two, the digital currency of China will be widely used in the financial system. Now, this represents, again, right, the first major global economy to test sovereign digital currency. At this moment, you know, China is very much ahead than any central bank in a major economy, whether it's the US or Europe. So I think we can say that China at this moment is more actively testing the blockchain technology, and it is also putting more focus in terms of adopting blockchain technologies into real economic contexts, such as the fintech industry.
Let me ask you about the issue of data, and specifically data privacy. It seems to me this is now another kind of emerging area of potentially some friction between the United States and China. We see it playing out in terms of issues like TikTok and WeChat, where ultimately the issue is the integrity of data and personal data, et cetera. Can you walk us through the issues around data and data privacy that are now playing out in the U.S.-China relationship?
Oh, definitely. You know, actually, you already covered the two most important aspects of the data issues. You know, one is about data issues in the business context, and then another is the data issue at a national context, which is more philosophical. In the case of TikTok, you know, here it relates to personal data privacy, the collection of personal data and analyze them at a large scale, which may eventually lead to some national security concern. So here, you know, it's about cross-border data flow issue. To what extent a company operating in a foreign jurisdiction can freely transfer the data back to its headquarters, right? You know, this obviously applies to TikTok and its Chinese headquarters, but it can similarly apply to Microsoft's cloud business in China and its headquarters in Seattle. So that's one contentious issue. Another one, as you touched on, is relating to things like sovereign digital currency. Because when digital currency is widely used, you know, that means the government can track every activity, not only in the financial system, but also in the day-to-day world, because the digital currency can link every action back to the central bank's data center. Here, you know, it's an issue about national policy on data. Here, it's more of a philosophical question. To what extent the sovereignty government should collect and manage the data of the whole population? And I think on that one, the jury is still out. You know, different countries are going to test different models. And as the digital economy evolves, our thoughts, philosophies will evolve accordingly.
At the big picture level, I want to just touch briefly on the topic of the Chinese demographic picture, which relates broadly to China's economic growth trajectory. China recently published some key census information, and there's been a lot of discussion in recent days about China's demographic challenge, namely the peaking of China's population and the beginning of a major shrinking of China's population over the coming decades. That's what's projected. And this, along with the aging of China's population, which has been widely discussed for many years, has caused many observers to conclude that China is facing some profound demographic challenges over the coming decades that could really undermine China's ability to achieve its economic and broader strategic ambitions. What is your take on the impact of these demographic issues on China's economic, technological, and strategic ambitions?
I think the demographic shift has been a driving force for China's technology innovation. If you look at China 20 years ago, it was still very much an import-export driven economy. And for that, the large population of young Chinese, especially those from the rural areas, less educated, they become the main force for that industry. And they did, you know, contribute a lot, you know, to the growth of China during those years. In recent years, I believe the central government recognized the shift in the demographic composition. as a result, you know, the government put more focus on the economic model transformation. As we talked about before, you know, the shift is from import-export driven low-end manufacturing business into a more consumption and innovation driven economy. So these days, you know, we see more startups coming up, not only in the internet industries, but also in more traditional industries to change the setup of the traditional enterprises to make them more efficient and smarter, which going forward will need less low-end labor. Instead, the new generation companies will focus on quote-unquote smart laborers. So I think this demographic shift is a driving force for China's tech innovation. Now, the challenge for China is that can China make that transition smoothly before the aging population crisis kicked in and becoming a huge burden on the economy?
You mentioned China is shifting its economic model from kind of the traditional export-import model to one that focuses on innovation, domestic consumption, and services. And apropos of that point that you've made, at a big picture level, I wonder if you have thoughts as to whether China might need to make adjustments, concomitant adjustments, in its political model, given the centrality of innovation as the Chinese economy matures and the Chinese economy grows. Generally, innovation, you know, requires an atmosphere in which people can create and put ideas out in a way that's unrestricted and where the best ideas win out in the marketplace. Do you see any tension between the emphasis on innovation that we see in the Chinese economy as we go forward and the Chinese system as it exists today? And might there need to be any adjustments in your judgment?
I would say to a large extent, the answer is no. You know, in general, you know, China's innovation ecosystem has been very robust, you know, in terms of new business models, new tech innovations. You know, China is probably one of the most active innovation center and more importantly, probably the most competitive. So in many areas, you don't see that kind of issue. You know, I guess your question touched on some aspects of the innovation areas, you know, let's say media contents related platforms, right? You know, they are certainly subject to more regulations than we typically see in the US. And we have seen companies like TikTok asked by Chinese content regulators, right, to take a certain part of businesses just off the business. And sometimes, you know, video platforms and other similar content platforms were asked to pause their operations in certain areas, and they have to make adjustments in order to get the compliance done, then to restart that business. So I recognize, you know, what you described is there, but I think, you know, that extra layer of regulation only applies to certain areas. For most sectors, I would say the Chinese startup founders have the same kind of free market to compete, just like their U.S. counterparts.
Let me ask you one question about your most recent book, and then I'll have a final question as well. But I wanted to ask you about the digital war, how China's tech power shapes the future of AI, blockchain, and cyberspace. Can you walk us through some of your key findings and assessments from that book?
Sure. Now, first of all, you know, the title of the digital war is a bit of a marketing trick. It made a widely publishing happy because it gets lots of attention. When I wrote that book, you know, it was a sequel to my earlier book, China's Mobile Economy. So the book title was planned to be China's Digital Economy, illustrating that China's economy has leapt forward from its early focus on smartphone, internet connectivities, and a mobile payment into a more, quote-unquote, hard tech-focused digital economy relating to AI, blockchain, and cloud, so on and so forth. You know, that was the background. But the digital war became the title for two reasons. You know, one, China's digital economy is no longer a domestic one. As China's digital power expands beyond its border, you know, it actually becomes a global phenomenon. So in other words, China's digital economy has its global implications. So the title, The Digital War, reflects the fact that Chinese digital giants are also going abroad, such as Alibaba, Tencent, etc., as well as new generation startups like TikTok. And another aspect is when we look at today's geopolitics, we no longer use the term trade war, right? Instead, technology becomes the new center of global geopolitics. So therefore, the title, The Digital War, also reflects the fact that the geopolitical tension between China and U.S. are increasingly coming from the tech aspect instead of the trade surplus or renminbi currency exchange rate, those type of topics. So again, the book is about China's tech revolution, and its new focus is China's innovation power in hard, real digital technologies such as AI, blockchain, and cloud. However, you know, the book is written to describe China's tech revolution as a global story because it has profound implications to the global economy as well as global geopolitics.
Let me ask you one last question, and it's kind of a big picture opportunity to look into the future. Given the growing rivalry between the United States and China, particularly in the area of advanced technology and a lot of the specific topics that we've discussed just now, where do you see the relationship in 5 years or even 10 or 20? Do you think we can get to a place in the U.S.-China relationship where the two countries are competing legitimately and vigorously, but within the constraints of generally accepted rules of the road? Or has that possibility already slipped away from us at this point? And any other final thoughts on the future of this relationship, and particularly the technology piece of it as we go forward?
Yeah, it's great to close the discussion at a optimistic tone, actually, David, because I'm positive. You know, maybe because my last two decade professional life was all about cross-border between China and U.S., I'm still optimistic about China-U.S. collaboration and win-win solutions going forward. So if you look at me, right, you know, last two decades, you know, I was educated both in China and the U.S. You know, I was a lawyer both in China and the U.S. And before I worked for China's government fund to invest globally, including the U.S., I got the training from Wall Street banks like J.P. Morgan and Barclays Capital. So from my background, you know, I always see huge synergies between these two superpowers and the two leading innovation centers. And, you know, if we look at the market right now, you know, we can still have reasons to be optimistic, because the most obvious example of decoupling is that some of the Chinese companies are being delisted from New York Stock Exchange, et cetera, under U.S. sanctions and the U.S. stock ban. However, the background of this is the U.S. has been the most popular jurisdiction for Chinese companies to go IPO outside of China. And last 12 months, you know, despite all the trade war, digital war, everything war between China and the U.S., it has been a record year, you know, for Chinese companies coming to U.S. IPO listing. That was true in 2020, and it is true yet to date in 2021. So I think, you know, little known by people outside of the financial market, the deep connection between a Chinese market, U.S. market, Chinese startups, you know, the U.S. venture capitals, it is much deeper than people thought. So I still have reason to believe that we can figure it out.
Well, Winston, we really appreciate it. And I want to thank you for your incredible insights and for sharing your perspective. And I think, just as you've rightly noted, the technology issues and the issues around technology in the U.S.-China relationship really are now on center stage, displacing, I would say, most of the other issues that are there. There are a lot of areas of contention. But I think the issue that's really going to drive this relationship in one direction or the other, more than any other issue, is this whole question of technology and whether the United States and China can, in fact, find a way to compete and to do so in a way that doesn't require each side to view the other as an enemy. And I think if we can do that, both the United States and China can get stronger as a result of healthy competition between our nations, and competition can drive all of us forward just as it has for all of human history. So we are so grateful to you, Winston, and thank you so much for sharing these insights.
Oh, thank you, David. You know, thank you again for having me on your podcast today. Your Bush China Foundation has been an important bridge in the middle of China-U.S. tension. So I certainly thank you again for having me to have this conversation, and I wish your foundation will make more positive impact between China and the U.S.
Thank you, Winston. We really, really appreciate that very much. And to our listeners, I just want to say, remember to look for the Bush China Foundation podcast on our website, SoundCloud, and Spotify, where you can follow our conversations. Thank you for listening.